Hi folks, I'm Mark Fallows and this is the Impossible Network podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe on iTunes or your favourite podcast player. And please leave a rating and a review because it helps more people find us. If you want to find out more of what we get up to or suggest who we interview next, follow us on Instagram at The Impossible Network or visit theimpossiblenetwork.com. Okay, let's get started.
There's such a value in bringing people together and bringing people together around helping each other, helping the public, you know, whatever that is, supporting each other. It's why we're here. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is.
In part two, Hunter explains his NGO's mission to save lives in hurricane-hit regions by installing solar power units in first responder, fire and police stations, and how he co-founded Solar Responders with London-born, Las Vegas-based fire captain Richard Burt. Hunter discusses his mission to help the disadvantaged people of Puerto Rico, still devastated by the 2018 hurricane, and his vision to extend the renewable technology to other regions threatened by the ever-increasing risk of life-threatening hurricanes and climate change. Finally, we cover his principles, his influences, and his impossible advice. I hope you enjoy the thoughtful, humble, yet indomitable spirit of Hunter Johansson.
So what you've done with the Friends of Rockaway, with your friend Mike, and post-Sandy, and then the other community activism done with Scott in the city. Something happened after you witnessed that catastrophic hurricane in Puerto Rico. It led you to create an NGO called Solar Responders. Could you just talk to us about that experience?
Yeah.
And particularly the impact it had on you?
When Hurricane Katrina happened, I was in undergraduate in Vermont. And I was young. I was 19, 20 at the time. And it felt that at the time, it felt far, even though it was in New Orleans. I'd never been to New Orleans before. And I remember feeling this urge to like help. But I was in school. And looking back, I wish I would have went down there to see what was going on. When Sandy happened, you know, it was seeing the devastation firsthand. I realized that, hey, this is a trend. Like, there's a massive problem here. We're not ready for this. We're not responding properly. People are losing their lives, and they shouldn't be. And when Maria happened, I was like, I have to be down here. I cannot let my fellow Americans struggle and be in this utter despair. I have to go down there. It was this urge to just see what was going down there. And I was right. People were desperate, and a lot of lives were lost that shouldn't have been lost.
Yeah, because I think around 3,000 people reportedly died.
Yeah.
I don't think the death toll will ever be totally verified.
It will never be. And that's a conversation about like how we think about death and in these situations of utter despair. How do we measure this? And that's through storytelling too. You know, it's not just numbers. We have to be talking to people on the ground, you know, and that was this urge. I wanted to hear people.
But you didn't know at the time what you were intending to do.
You
didn't go there with a plan to say the solution is to build renewable energy resources for first responders. That wasn't at the forefront of your mind. So talk to us about how that idea came to you. And obviously, as we've said before, serendipity is a big part of why we do this podcast. So I'd love to understand what serendipitous encounter or situation led to you creating Solar Responders.
I love this story, and I love telling this story. So I was invited down by Marco Crapels. He's a renewable energy advocate. He's a former banker, and I say that he's former. He doesn't do that anymore, but he's a massive renewable energy advocate. He invited me down to Puerto Rico. He has a small nonprofit, he and his wife, and they invited me down and said, you know, I met him through one of my board members, Zara Duffy, who's with executive producer at Radical Media. He said, Hunter, you got to come down here. We Skyped. I never met Marco before. You know, Marco and I share a lot in common. And within, I think I bought a ticket in a week, I was landed in San Juan and was greeted by Richard Burt of Las Vegas Fire and Rescue. And
what was he doing there?
So this is the story. He was consulting with this with Marco's nonprofit. Captain Burt is an amazing humanitarian. When the storm happened, he contacted the fire department and was able to get in touch with the chief of the fire department. And Captain Richard Burt asked the chief, he was like, how are you guys doing? What do you need? The captain said, we need power. So Captain Richard Burt's a renewable energy advocate. He's, you know, installed tons, I don't even know how many renewable energy systems on his neighbors' homes. He's led fights against the utility in Nevada for net metering. This is a big passion of his. So he called his friend Marco and was like, hey, Marco, we got to install solar panels on some fire stations. This was even before solar responders. Mm-hmm. So Richard and Marco, through their connections, flew a private plane down to San Juan with help from friends and solar energy companies. And they were able to get three systems, I believe three, in the first month after the storm. Mm-hmm. I went down on a second deployment in January. So when I flew down, I was standing on top of a fire station. They were finishing up the installation in Barrio Obrero, which is a area of San Juan. They were finishing up an installation, and when I drove to the fire station, I was on top of a firehouse with solar on it, and my entire body just like lit up, so to speak, right? And I was, oh man, this is something extremely special. And whatever you're doing, Marco and Richard, I want to join you. So I consulted with this company, this nonprofit, for a couple of months. That's when I realized, after working with this company for a couple of months, I was like, this is too special to for this seems to be a full-time thing. It can't be part-time, and it can't be operated from, you know, California or New York. It has to be here. Like, I need to be on the ground. This needs to be scaled quickly. And that's when I decided, you know what? I'm going to start my own organization specifically dedicated to this mission. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't something – I didn't want to work on community centers. I didn't want to work on hospitals. I wanted to work specifically on fire and police and AMS stations, putting solar on them. So that's when I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this on the ground, build the relationships that I need to build, and do this the way that it should be done.
So your mission is to enable first responders to save lives through renewable energy.
Yes. You know, I tell this to business people that I meet. We're not in this for profit, right? It's the impact and the empowerment piece. We don't have anything proprietary in the for profit sense. Our strength is our relationships. Our strength is a community that we work with. Our strength is our partners. And that's how we're able to get this work done, because there's no other way to do this.
So let's just break this down into mm-hmm. where you are at the moment. There's 94 fire stations and 78 police stations and 20 EMS stations.
Yeah, private EMS.
In Puerto Rico. I've heard you say that the total cost of implementing solar mm-hmm. panels and the battery storage systems to enable all these first responders to be in a position to save lives, not if, but probably when another disaster hits, because these things aren't going away, is around $11.5 million. Dollars mm-hmm. to do that. Mm-hmm. Where are you at the moment in terms of implementing this?
So we have two fire stations. It's our proof of concept in Culebra, mm-hmm. which is an island of about 1,800 people off the coast of Puerto Rico, and then Rincon, which is on the west side of the island, for those who have been to Puerto Rico. I was so honored to have those stations donated, the first in Rincon, by Colin Jost, who's my soon-to-be brother-in-law. And then my sister donated the second station in Culebra.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Must be really proud.
I'm so proud. Yeah. I mean, my family saw this vision. Mm-hmm. They saw how important this was. So Colin, his family has been with FDNY for a long time, for generations.
And what does Colin do?
He's on SNL. He's like the head writer on SNL. So Collins, his family is a longtime firefighter. His mom, she's the former chief medical officer for former chief medical officer for FDNY.
Oh, wow.
She was the chief medical officer during 9/11. She is an incredible person. And so his grandfather was a firefighter, and so he's a long time.
It's in the blood.
It's in the blood. So when I told him about this, he was like, done. You know, wow. Collins, an amazing soul. And my sister was there to support me 1,000%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's this community. When I talked to her about this, there was this community in Culebra, which is a very, very vulnerable part of Puerto Rico. That island was running on diesel generator power for over a year. I can go into why that happened. But my family, they came in at a point when I was like, man, where is this going? Who's going to back us? You know, big foundations are, you know, they're hard to access. Mm-hmm. And so we have those two fire stations. We're at this point of, now that we have these two stations up, we're asking the question, what happens to those stations when we're gone? My goal is not to be in Puerto Rico in perpetuity. This is an island. It's of Puerto Ricans and for Puerto Ricans. Puerto Ricans are our family. Puerto Rico's a very special place to me, and ever since I was a kid. It's a community that I'm very close to growing up in New York. There's almost 1 million Puerto Ricans in New York, and my best friends growing up were Puerto Rican. And so even if I were doing work in any other part of the country or the world, you know, it's not my objective to remain in a place or to, you know, it should be for the people. So then the question becomes, what do we do with these stations? These systems require maintenance. These buildings are owned by the government. They shouldn't be operated by a small little nonprofit based out of New York. They should be controlled. These systems should be owned and operated by the people. So I'm moving to Puerto Rico January 3rd. So it's less than like 3 weeks now, I guess. And, you know, the goal is to start conversations with government officials and leaders, saying, "All right, we're gonna raise the capital on a donation basis. We're gonna provide 5 to 10 years of maintenance. We're gonna contract locally, so all the maintenance, all the installation is done locally. We're gonna empower people locally. But then, what happens after 10 years? You know, these systems, batteries last a long time, and they require monitoring. What happens to the panels if one is damaged
in another hurricane
yeah. So the panels are, I just want to say, the panels are windproof up to 175 miles per hour, which is
a category 5,
yeah, which is a new building code that was passed after Maria in Puerto Rico. So but what happens to something if it's damaged, you know, if the warranty has to be, you know, enforced? I'm not going to be I can't be there. So
I mean, yeah. That's one of my thoughts when I was reading about what the work you're doing is, surely this type of infrastructure and renewable energy strategy should be part of public policy,
mm-hmm.
and something that government takes responsibility for.
Yeah, you know,
and not a small nonprofit out of New York.
Yeah, it should be. You know, Puerto Rico they're not in a great fiscal situation, mm-hmm. and you know, there's a control board that oversees all of their finances. When you don't have a big tax base, you don't have a lot of money to spend on those critical resources and infrastructure, especially. Even in the States, we infrastructure spending is,
yeah,
right. I see these reports all the time, these news headlines. You know, how infrastructure. You know, we need to be spending more on roads and bridges and so on.
We all want it.
We all want it. We all need it. Mm. You know, we need it. So, you know, the traditional backup for any first responder station, hospital, you know, the Morgan Stanley building downtown, whatever it is, it's diesel generators. And so we're targeting that. We're not competing with the grid. We're not into telling Puerto Ricans how they should produce power. We're looking at the backup power. So the stations we're proposing, they're tied to the grid. And that's important for first responders. Redundancy, I keep saying this, redundancy equals resiliency. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the grid fails, which it does often, especially in places like Rincon and Culebra, there's this solar system that kicks in immediately, and the firefighters, police officers, they have continuous access to power to charge radios, computers, the 911 system, cooling fans, and the community knows that this is a place they can seek help. So,
that's the issue. That didn't exist in that Maria.
And so when Maria happened, diesel generators broke down because the government didn't have money for maintenance over the years, and or they weren't able to get fuel to these parts of Puerto Rico, which is, you know, if you've been to Puerto Rico, the roads are treacherous, and you know, when there's rain, there's mudslides, a lot of roads shut down, so fuel delivery was very tough in these areas outside of San Juan. Mm-hmm. So if a responder, if a trained professional, and these men and women of the fire and police service they're professionals, and they're just like any other first responder in the States. They just don't have the same resources that we have. But if they don't have access to power, the most basic need of any person, especially a first responder, then they can't save lives, they can't do their jobs, and people die.
Could you just talk about the issue? Because a lot of people maybe hear about this and think, well, if you're rebuilding, and there's been so much money raised for rebuilding, why isn't that being taken care of? And I've heard you talk about the Stafford Act and the Jones Act. Could you just maybe break that down for listeners as to why those are barriers?
The Jones Act, Puerto Rico can't accept imports directly. Everything has to go through another port, generally Florida, and then it comes to Puerto Rico. So it's when you need aid immediately, it is totally inefficient and ineffective to do that. Why would you go to Florida and then to...
It slows everything down. And then the Stafford Act is about infrastructure renewal.
Yeah, so it's more about specifically like disasters and what is allowed to be rebuilt with federal money after a storm. The Jones Act is something that affects Puerto Ricans on a daily basis because it's not just about disasters, it's about trade in general. Mm-hmm. Everything has to go through another port.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's totally...
Why can't that be repealed?
It can be. You know, I think we can get, you know, we can talk politics a little bit, but you know, we have some great legislatures in New York who pushing the repeal of the Jones Act. It needs to be, in my opinion, top priority for the Democrats. Repealing an act that is so devastating for Puerto Rico, where goods and services are a lot more expensive than they are in the States. Gas is more expensive. You know, everything has to be shipped through another port. So, you know, and for a population that has about a 45% poverty rate, it greatly affects them on a day-to-day basis. The Stafford Act, there needs to be more ability for government agencies to spend recovery money on innovative solutions, you know, before a disaster happens. We need to be proactive in these disasters, and not just building back what was the inefficiencies that existed before a storm. The Stafford Act especially is harmful because you can't innovate. There are these billions of dollars available, specifically through FEMA, and there's obviously, over the past 100 years or however long the Stafford Act has been around, there's new technologies, there's new ways of doing things that make sense now in these times.
Solar.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that government funding can't go towards paying for those new types of survival and planning for disasters in the future. So if the government, which is the entity that supports the public, like the greater public interest, right, can't pay for things that are going to save lives, it makes no sense. The Jones Act was very hurtful in the immediacy of Hurricane Maria. You know, the Trump administration, they waived the Jones Act for, I think, a week or 10 days.
So once you've, let's just play this forward, you will have these solar panels and batteries, storage batteries, right, implemented in Puerto Rico. What happens after that? Because that's just one location. There's plenty of other Caribbean islands, and let's just say there are the rest of the US that needs to migrate from diesel as a backup energy resource to this. So what are you doing? Are you calling up Elon and saying,
hey, Elon,
a bit of help here?
You know, kind of, I think what I did early in my career with, you know, working in these different sectors, you know, and then bringing them together in this effort. I feel that even to this day, I'm not a solar expert. I'm not a, you know, disaster mitigation expert. I'm not a nonprofit. You know, I'm not an expert in any one thing, but I can...
You're a community builder.
Community builder, right. And so it's what I feel my effectiveness is bringing these different areas together and the experts together and figuring this really complex situation out, which is in Puerto Rico, which is in disaster response in general, and then you know, the solar energy sector and so on. It combines all of these difficult issues into one, and the only way to do it is collaboration. So then the question comes, yeah, what then, right? You asked it, what happens then? It's a reason why I'm moving to Puerto Rico, to figure out what that is, what is best for Puerto Rico. They've passed a renewable energy bill, setting benchmarks for renewable energy by 2050 for 100%. Very tall task. What, you know, does this make sense for Puerto Rico? I know it makes sense for the fire department. The fire department is asking for it, and we were just listening, right? Captain Richard Burt was like, he was listening, and I just have my ear to the ground. And so we're following the needs of the men and women of the fire and police service. This can have a great impact on first responders in other islands. I look forward to those conversations because it's applicable in the States where there's a risk, where people are susceptible, and that's coastal areas, right? First, this is a viable solution. And I think that, you know, the conversation that we're having in Puerto Rico, we can have happen anywhere. Yeah.
And there's an urgency to it as well.
Great urgency. Yeah. And the government's kind of inability to implement quickly with the urgency, let me say. I kind of jumped that and I went straight to where I could be effective, which was on the ground, literally standing on a fire station and not in a boardroom or in a, you know, government office. I was like, now that we have this proof of concept, now that we need the government as they're a partner, it's time to sit down and have these honest conversations about what are the most effective tools, strategies, partners that we can bring in to increase Puerto Rico's resiliency for the next 200 years, knowing that climate change is one of the biggest risks to that whole region.
Mm-hmm. How are you approaching organizations and brands? Because you see this as clearly a commercial opportunity for them as well to build brand relevance and brand value. Every brand today is embracing purpose as a mission. Surely that must be an opportunity for you as well to start conversations in the corporate sector about getting brands to step up, whether it be through their CSR budgets or directly from their marketing budgets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's corporations, they're in business, you're supposed to be in touch with your end user. You're supposed to be in touch with the community, right, who you're selling your products to and so on. Tesla, they donated a lot. And Sunrun donated as well, and they were a great partner. I think we can all teach each other something. That these big solar companies and the corporate companies, they offer so much in terms of risk and compassion. You know what it means to be a responsible company. And I think we can teach them about partnering with communities and how to effectively carry out their CSR, their values, because we share a lot. We share an interest in saving the planet. Anybody you speak with at Tesla or these big companies, right? They're environmentalists, and they want to end the fossil fuel industry's influence on government and in our society. And so we share a lot, but we have to listen to each other, and because we just have a lot to offer.
Do you think you're going to face, as you scale this, do you think you're going to face resistance from the fossil fuel industry? Because you are undermining their core business model.
Yes, there's a lot of power that we're going to face, or a lot of interest we're going to face. You know, there's the diesel generators, right? There's diesel generators, let me just say, they have a place right now, for sure. I'm not knocking the whole thing. Redundancy is important. We're not in a perfect world. And solar is and batteries are not perfect, but they are the best solution we have right now. And they're the best for Puerto Rico. So, yeah, I mean, we're...
And if Captain Richard Burt is telling everyone they need to, I think we've got to pay attention.
Yeah, we got to pay attention. It's... We're doing this with a strict purpose of empowerment. So I'm not trying to destroy the fossil fuel industry. I'm not like my interest, as I said, I kind of said before. My interest is not to tell Puerto Rico how they should power their island. This is just a common sense solution
to save lives
for a critical need, and that's the mission. And it's important that. I think to be effective in our mission, we have to stick to it. Conversations about who we're looking to overtake, it's not effective. What I know is from firsthand is that diesel generators, there's a better tool in the toolbox, and that's solar and battery storage. It's not diesel generators.
How does curiosity and creativity contribute to the work that you do?
You know, the creative side... It's starting your own nonprofit. There's creativity in relationships, managing relationships. There's curiosity in learning about new sectors and new, you know, there's things I never knew about. Solar, like the engineering of solar, I didn't know anything about. But now it's something I'm very curious to learn more about. Being in Puerto Rico, which I was never in Puerto Rico before Hurricane Maria. Now I've been there 11 times and moving there on January 3rd. You know, but there's also something about Puerto Rico. There's also like a familiarity. You know, it feels like when I'm there, when I'm in San Juan, I feel like I'm almost in New York. When I'm in the mountains in Lares, I feel a closeness with nature, the lifestyle, and a curiosity to want to experience more of it. It's a beautiful island. And deserves to be protected, and it deserves everything.
Okay. What principles do you stand by or live by?
I think listening first, keeping your mouth closed and your ears open, always first. When you're a white guy, straight, who's, you know, I'm heterosexual, I fit in that box. And, you know, I think it's critical for me to gain empathy is to listen. We have to listen. And then when we want to talk, we have to listen some more. It's really, really important. I would say another rule of thumb, this is life, it's life, business, it's everything, is not to react, but to let things play out a bit. Don't always go with your first reaction, although it is right a lot of the time. It can also, you know, you can also kick yourself when you're wrong. But things take time to play out. They do. You know, we all get into places of loneliness and isolation, and it's important to feel that, to be in that place and recognize it and know that things will get better. You just have to stick to it, let it play out a little bit. That's brought me through a lot of times, a lot of dark times. Yeah.
What hard choices have you had to make that might have been tough at the time but have turned out to be the right decision?
Mm-hmm. I would say I haven't. The tough choices that I've had to make, I think I've mitigated. So I've it's kind of a survival instinct. We grew up in a poor middle class home in Manhattan, and so there was a bit of a survival mentality that I always had. I always had Plan C. So, you know, when Plan B failed, I had backups. And I was always I was never afraid of leaving something or quitting it if it didn't feel right. You know, if there was a gut instinct, which I said I was usually right. There were definitely times I probably should have stuck it out, but it was just an instinct of mine to just want to quit something or a job or a relationship. Or, you know, one time I was in nursing school when I was 25, I was at BMCC, and I, you know, I left a year and a half in. Because I knew that wasn't right for me, that track. So I've just through my upbringing learned to mitigate those things, mm-hmm. and it's sheltered me from, you know, outside of a few like really heartbroken relationships that I've been with, it sheltered me from, you know, from place, you know, like ultimate like failing, kind of not knowing where I was going. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Where do you go to discover new ideas?
Nature. I need to leave New York, not just New York, just leave a city, you know, and that idea, like just for instance, solar responders, that idea was in Puerto Rico. Yeah, nature is it's where I get energy. It's where I get ideas, creativity. If I'm not in nature, I have something to remind me of it, an artifact or something that where it brings me back to a time and a place where I can literally, you know, like transport myself in my mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your perspective on failure?
I think failure, it's something to not be afraid of, but it's important to understand that it's going to happen. This is not a perfect world, and your vision doesn't happen overnight, and it's going to take a few times for me to figure things out, right? It took me, I've had jobs, everything from a park ranger when I was 24 in Riverside Park to a babysitter to nursing school to a bartender. Like, I've had so many different types of jobs. So those aren't, and I've quit them and I've moved on, but those aren't failures. They're a time and a place where I was happy, but this type of work is a lifelong happiness. And I don't know of anything else I would want to be doing. I see failure as an inevitability that needs to be mitigated in some way. And I don't necessarily believe failure exists. I just feel like something just wasn't right, you know, it just wasn't your time or you know, wasn't my time or my place. And that's what life is, and that's what we all go through.
Who's made you reevaluate yourself?
Who's made me reevaluate?
I'm sure your
myself?
Sister's done a few times when you've been in these bad relationships.
Yeah, you know, my family has. They've been my core. I've been able to in those times of uncertainty, I have them to go to. I got to say that, you know, I've waded through those times, and as time happens, there's those creative moments, as you mentioned before, you know, those creative moments, those moments of collaboration, it could be even a conversation that I have with someone on the street that inspire me to want to do something or do it in something in a different way. So it's kind of time. I think time is an inspiration, and I really credit just being and experiencing the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you keep up with technology? I mean, you're obviously at the cutting edge of certain technologies and in renewable energy.
True. How do I keep up with technology? It's something that I never had a very close affiliation with. I remember my Apple II when I was, you know, 5 years old. I loved that computer. But I leave technology a bit to the experts, and it was never my strongest suit or my interest, but I see the value of it and appreciate the value of it and those doing the work in it and want to learn more about it. And as it becomes more part of our lives, adapting to it, I guess. Mm.
Okay. Well, I suspect you're going to be learning a lot about
battery
technology soon.
So the technology side, I'm hyper interested in it because that's how we're going to receive energy in the future.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to acknowledge and appreciate and want to be, you know, instinctually just want to learn more about it because we're probably at one point, like soon, we're going to have batteries in our homes.
Oh, I mean, there's no question
about it.
Impossible question. What would your advice be to someone that's maybe about to graduate, go to study, has got a dream, goal, grand ambition, but has been told, you'll never do that, that's impossible?
I think that, you know, those people who say no, they're the ones that never tried. And you have to try, you know, day by day. each day you take a step in the direction that you want to go, and then the next day you take another step.
You're certainly living that.
Yeah. I'm so fortunate and appreciative of where I am and the opportunity that I've been given in Puerto Rico and the fire department there and the community that's embraced what we're doing. Mm-hmm. It takes this special type of like energy, like person to commit to that and to follow it, because it's easy. You know, I can always go back to the private or public sector, mm-hmm. and get a job and sit at a desk, and that's there, because of the work I've done. But to follow your own path is a extremely special opportunity and something that we don't have. We're limited in our time, so taking advantage of the time that you can, mm-hmm. yeah, I just do it. Take advantage of it now. For anybody graduating, do it. Just take advantage.
Okay. We have a question, which is, what's one problem worth solving? But I think you've already decided your big one right now, and you're doing it, which is obviously solar. But mm-hmm. if you could return to one night or day in history, where, when, and with who, or to see who? Mm.
I think, marching in Montgomery, Alabama, that would be the type of revolution, the type of energy, the movement that I would want to be around.
You'd be at home there.
Yeah, I would feel at home there. The intent of people to live their most, mm-hmm. to live up to their fullest ideals and dignity and respect and fighting for that, something we can all attest to today. I would want to be there at that moment, fighting side by side.
Yeah. Okay. What's your go-to karaoke song?
Go-to karaoke song?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
When you and Scarlett are out for your night on the West Village.
Fight for your right to party? I don't know. It's anything Beastie Boys.
That's a nice one.
Yeah. Let me think. Yeah.
Beastie Boys is fine.
Yeah,
it's
pretty good.
That,
yeah. Yeah, that's everybody loves a good party, so I think Beastie Boys.
Yeah. Best recent Netflix Amazon series that your sister didn't play a part in.
Yeah, right. Man, I need to catch up.
It doesn't have to be recent. Just something.
Sopranos. I mean, like, they're on Netflix, but that was HBO. Yeah. But that's like my favorite show of all time. So I haven't watched anything recently, to be frank.
That's all right. Sopranos is a good one. It's a classic.
Yep.
What book would you like us to offer? There's three listeners that come up with the best comments in the comment section.
So I'm finishing soon. I'm actually probably at this interview. I'll finish. Terry Tempest Williams' Erosion. She is an amazing man. That her words just transfer to me so well. This summer I took a solo road trip out to Oregon, Washington, Utah, Arizona, Montana. I visited about like 25, maybe more national parks. I went to Navajo Nation, the Four Corners area.
Wow, that must have been something else.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. And I was, the energy of that area just transferred to me. And I saw kind of beyond my lifetime. I saw into the past. I saw very deep into the past and the future. And time almost didn't exist when I was there. It was a really, really, really special moment. And I just, I connected with the book so much. There's obviously this assault currently, the current administration on our natural land, on our public lands and the natural environment. And it's terrible what's going on to Native communities, to parks all over the country. And it gets me thinking, she talks about our relationship with the natural environment. Mm-hmm. And I think about, kind of brings me back to how I can be most effective, and it's talking about people's connection with their community, with the land. Puerto Rico is, and Puerto Ricans are so connected with the land. And over the past 500 years, through colonizations of the Spaniards and the U.S., these colonizers have tried to break their will. Puerto Ricans are very, very resilient, and there's this movement now, that's existed. It's existed, but I think it's resurfaced ever since the hurricane even more so is connecting people back to the land. 90% of food in Puerto Rico is imported. That's crazy, right?
That is crazy.
The Puerto Rico once again should be for Puerto Ricans, and they can grow anything in Puerto Rico. So this, you know, this book by Terry Tempest Williams, Erosion, you know, it brings me back to that place of like the, of how important it is to stay connected to the land and respecting natives, populations who've existed on these lands for thousands of years.
We went to a great exhibition, experience called the Arctic Refuge in Greenpoint recently. It was being staged by an environmental activist group. And it's all about how there's a law being passed that's letting the Arctic Refuge be bid on by all the oil companies. And no one's allowed to bid on it unless you are prepared to drill for oil there.
Right.
And it's pristine environment.
Right.
And it's salmon breeding grounds. It's been an Indian reservation for years. And it's crazy that this is happening.
So, these are policies not just of this administration, but of previous ones as well.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
yeah.
These are executive orders that can be overruled, right, with the stroke of a pen, right? So one president creates a monument or creates a protected area, and the next one just erases it. And then all of a sudden, there's permits for oil and gas drilling in these areas that are so special to us, to native populations and communities.
It's crazy.
And it's so easy to destroy something rather than we can take nothing to destroy something, but to create and to conserve, that takes real leadership. And just to bring it back to Puerto Rico, it's something that you know, when I'm moving down there in a few weeks, it's something that we're looking forward to. I'm looking forward to speaking with and engaging with leaders that have foresight and are looking forward to the next 50, 100, 200 years of existence, because that's the type of leadership and outlook that we need.
Totally agree. I'm glad that you're going to be part of that. Final question. Who should we interview next?
Oh, there's so many people. Well, for one, I think, you know, Captain Richard Burtz.
There you go.
He's one. My board chair, Nita Baum, she runs a company that she started called Be Free, and they do diversity inclusion training with organizations that do inclusivity and diversity work. You know, often are companies that espouse this, or, you know, they have these, you know, messaging that this is what they represent, oftentimes don't practice it. And so it's needed. Like, we all need to be talking about these issues and constantly learning, and none of us are perfect. So you know, Nita Baum, she does this amazing training with various groups, and she's been a true asset to this organization and then to everybody she encounters. I highly recommend her.
We'll look for Richard and Nita.
Yes.
Just to wrap up, to thank you for your time and your answers, and to acknowledge you for the work that you're doing. I think you are working on an incredibly important initiative that has to scale over time. So we wish you all the best
with that.
And what you're doing is what I'd see as a selfless pursuit of purpose that clearly comes from great parental values that your parents have instilled in you.
Family.
Family. Yeah, the importance of family, and family being the broader family. And I acknowledge you for your empathy and your listening ability and your sense of urgency.
Thank you.
So thank you very much, Hunter. And we look forward to going out on a karaoke night with you one night.
Yes.
But anyway, and a final question. Your favorite film of your sister?
Oh, I'm going to go.
Your go-to.
Oh, man.
Sunday afternoon. Round at the Hanson's house.
So my sister's done 50 films, maybe. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So I'm going to go back to, you know, the start. So she did this film, Manny and Lo. She was probably 10 at the time.
Weren't you in that?
I think I was the Golf Family.
There you go. I think you were.
It's my one IMBD credit. So it's funny, like a few weeks ago, somebody looked me up and they were like, they were, you know, they're telling me, oh, you know, we're interested in writing a script. You might play the part. I searched that you're an actor. And I'm like, are you talking about like the 96 Golf Family? Yeah, sure. But that movie was, you know, it was about kind of like running away. It was about finding yourself. It was about inspiration, you know, curiosity. Mm-hmm. And my sister was amazing in it. And, you know, those were formidable times, you know, when we were 10, 11 years old. Yeah. A lot happened in our lives at that time. So yeah, that was my favorite movie. I haven't seen, she's done so many films. Mm-hmm. I've probably seen maybe.
You probably don't get to see her much.
What's that?
You probably don't get to see her very much.
Yeah, you know, she's so busy. I wish I got to see her more because it's my twin.
She's probably saying the same thing about you.
Yeah.
She's so busy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so we try, like, things like, we share so much. And, you know, we grew up the same with compassion and empathy and all those things that I have, she has. Yeah. And so when I'm doing something, you know, she's always had an interest in anything that I've ever done, whether that was with Scott Stringer or, you know, now in Puerto Rico. Or in Rockaway, I mean, you know, she did so much for Rockaway, and so, you know, it's such a pleasure whenever we can work on something together. You know, it's also important for me to, you know, continue working on my own things, mm-hmm. just like she does hers. You know, I've never wanted to be an actor, so and never will be an actor unless there's, you know, unless we shoot some documentary about Puerto Rico, which I'm crossing my fingers for.
Definitely. You've definitely got to be doing the documentary.
Yes. Yeah, we got to film it.
But you should be documenting. You should be documenting this now.
I know.
You need to be. You need to get this Instagram.
Start a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And get your Instagram strategy working.
We'll come.
Come to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Yes. We share so much. We're constantly talking, and she's always wanting to, you know how she can get engaged because she knows that these issues are important. She knows that things have, you know, we need new innovative ways of doing things. And so she's at the cutting edge and always wanting to support.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, that's it for this week. If you like the show, please subscribe and ideally give us a 5-star rating and a review because it helps more people find us. Just go to iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player to listen and subscribe. If you want to learn more or have someone you'd like us to interview, just visit theimpossiblenetwork.com. Or DM us on Instagram at The Impossible Network. This show is an Impossible Network production and is produced by Bettina McKaylee and Elaine Castillo-Keller. But for now, be curious, be creative, and seek out serendipity. See you next time.